attending the Replacing Drugs with Drama workshop. At this time, I'd like to introduce you to best sponsor in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Her name is Karen B. from Temple Hills.
Yeah. I'm an addict and my name is Karen. Hi, family. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous, and thank God for the principles that we stand on to help us build the foundation that we have today. And I have to put that out front because I clearly understand that it's a program, and then the fellowship is something different. When I first came around here, I was greeted with a loving fellowship of men and women that welcomed me into Narcotics Anonymous. They placed no judgment on me. They didn't look down on me. They taught me how to lift my head up high no matter what decisions I may have made. And this is early on. You know, I was fortunate enough to be blessed with some wonderful people that came to me when I needed them the most. People like Stuart, when I come out of an insane asylum, just like one who flew over the cuckoo's nest. You remember that movie? Yeah. When I went up in that institution, I kind of thought I was a little bit different. But I stayed in there long enough to realize I had a lot of baggage, a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, a lot of issues that I brought into that institution. However, I was dressed up real nice with a lot of clothes that I had stole, a lot of silks, a lot of diamonds draped across my fingers. So for the most part, when I went into that institution, I did not think I was that bad. It was only after staying there a while and doing just a teeny bit of work, I realized that I just might be the one that they talk about in the literature that some of us are sicker than most. I had to immediately own that, yeah, I was a sick individual. Thank God for God for leading me into that place. I stayed there long enough to take a good look at how I looked walking in. I came into that program or into that facility with a wool hat on my head. It was June the 3rd, 1988. Summertime. I had a wool hat on my head, a wool jumpsuit, and some ankle boots on, and I thought I was all right. I just was tired of going through what I was going through with that cocaine. I was tired of ending up in a hotel room trying to trick for a 16th and ain't get paid. I remember at the end, thank God for the bottle. I remember at the end sitting in a hotel lobby with a 22 gun and one bullet in it that I had been toting around in and out of the projects of Richmond, Virginia, looking for my last blast. Ended up in a hotel room on June the 1st, tricking with a brother that is now dead. I did not get a chance to thank that brother for that experience. Because it was through that experience that made me surrender and ended up in Narcotics Anonymous. I thank God for the individual that I was tricking with, and I ain't get paid. I thank God I ain't get paid for that experience. I had the pain that I needed to surrender to a new way of life. I thank God for God. I sat in that lobby with a 22 gun and one bullet in it, thinking that that gun was to protect me when I went up in all those places that was dangerous. But really, that gun was for me at the end of my story. I really wanted to kill myself. I just couldn't go fast enough. I remember calling a family member, and I'll get to the topic, but I need you to follow me in the drama. Yeah. I remember calling my brother and telling him I was just so tired of living and doing the things that I was doing. And it was through his love and through his willingness to help me that I went to a hospital, and they asked me if I was willing to go to Baltimore, Maryland. And I told that doctor, I didn't care where you sent me, I was willing to go wherever. What I realized, I had already started living in hell. Anything different had to be better. And so I ended up in Baltimore, Maryland, around some good old dope fiends. Seriously, some good loving dope fiends. I'm talking about addicts that the hands was big as baseball bats. See, I hadn't seen too much of that in Richmond, Virginia. I'm talking about some addicts that had spent years and years and years of time behind the walls. I'm talking about some addicts that came in recovery fighting for their life no matter what. That it wasn't such thing that certain things ain't good for the rooms. Everything was good for the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous if it meant saving your life. And they taught me to fight for my life in the name of recovery, and I did. And I remember this brother Stewart telling me I had to build my foundation in stone. Real simple stuff early on. He said to me, build your foundation in stone because there are some storms that are about to come. Little did I know that when he was talking about when I headed back home to Richmond, Virginia, my good old country town, I was faced with a sister in Narcotics Anonymous that had murdered my brother. Now, I love this part of my story because that talks about the positive drama that can take place without your permission. That girl made it to Narcotics Anonymous just like I did, but she was one that had murdered my brother with a .22 gun. And that little teeny bullet had went in one side of his body and out the other side, which was his heart. But she ended up in Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't think she deserved to be here. How dare she? But what you people told me that was here before I got here says she belonged here just like you. Now I'm talking about some drama now. I'm getting ready to start. I'm talking about coming out of treatment, putting the drugs down, and here come the drama. But it ain't the kind of drama you think that might have took place. The drama that went on was prayer and meditation early on. The drama that took place during that time was that you people told me I had to pray for her if I wanted to stay around here. They told me to take an honest look at the part I played in my own brother's death. Baby, baby. Yeah, I didn't pull the trigger, but I hung with that sister and we talked all that yang yang gangster stuff. We walked with guns and with bullets in it, and we went up in them neighborhoods and dared anybody to F with us. She was the one. We talked all that gangster stuff. You remember? You remember them days? When you, maybe I'm the only one. Maybe I am the only one in something like this, but I remember the days very well. Those were the sick days, real sick. And I remember you people telling me I had to pray for her if I wanted to stay around here, and I proceeded to pray for her. Yeah, oh, I know it, oh, I know it. And I did. And in 6 months' time, the forgiveness took place. What I'm talking about is the third step. What I'm talking about is the third step. I gave it to God, and I kept laying it there until I surrendered. And what happened is, through prayer, meditation, and trusting in the process, something happened that permitted us to embrace each other in a meeting, in a big old meeting similar to this. And we embraced with love and forgiveness. How I know is that I have not been able to go back and pick up any of that anger, any of that resentment that I had toward that sister. I let go and I gave it to God. Now that's a drama. That's the initial part. That's the first part in the process of my recovery taking place. I started believing in something that was greater than me. I started making some other decisions that I didn't take God in the process with me, and y'all know what that was. Talk to me, relationships. So I proceeded to get into various relationships. And then when it stopped working, I wanted to cry victim, but I learned a long time ago you ain't no victim in nothing that you go through. You're a volunteer for all that pain. We already told you what you should have been doing, but you chose to do something else. You chose to fill the void with something else that you thought was greater than God. And so I went through some experiences that was awesome. I wouldn't trade them in for nothing in the world. Absolutely nothing. I thank God for the experience. I thank God for the drama that came with it, because without the drama, there was no change. I remember early on coming into this program and sleeping with one brother, and then when that stopped working, I turned to my next best drug of choice, which felt just like a shot of cocaine. To find that when two of the same men sat in the room in front of me, I felt like a gutball, scum of the earth, dirty somebody that I always felt. And that was my surrendering point. That was some drama that went on there. How you be in one relationship and then you creep off in another relationship. And what I realized early on is that the same person will use again. I know I'm talking to some sisters now. I know I'm not walking in my shoes all by myself. Y'all told me I wasn't unique, and ain't nothing that I'm going to talk about that somebody else ain't been through with. That's what I love about this program. I love being in a big room like this, because guess who I'm around? Liars and whores and thieves. I just love it. Because what I know, even if you want to, you can't judge me no matter what. You can't judge me no worse than I judge myself. That's the hip. Because what I found is that y'all really don't judge me. I judge me. And when I start judging me, I start disappearing. And I stop going to meetings because I really don't want y'all to see and know all that I'm going through. So I want to give y'all the charge that, you know, them people don't understand what I'm going through when I go up in a treatment center and pull out a newcomer. Them people don't quite understand when I go up in a treatment center. It wasn't even a treatment center. It was a shelter. At 9 years clean. Coming out of one relationship, not giving up, and giving up 5 minutes before the miracle. And then I step up in a treatment center and I find somebody 6'4". I find somebody that's 6 feet and 4 inches tall, that's toting an illness. That person inside of me said that, but you can help him. But you can help him. You got the foundation that's needed to help him. And I remember taking that brother up Baltimore, Maryland, amongst my good friends, or amongst my loving friends like Harold J. and my sponsor. And I remember taking him up there, leading him to the water, but he just wouldn't drink. And the water that I was talking about is people up in Baltimore that's dealing with all these illnesses. Them was my people that taught me no matter what you go through, just don't use, fight for your life. And so I led the brother to the water and he just wouldn't drink. He kept on using because he wasn't capable of having, he didn't have the coping skills necessary. So we tried a lot of harm reduction because he just wouldn't surrender. To find out that harm reduction didn't even work. Well, baby, what I did find out was that the casino started looking a little bit better than a room. And I remember running to the casino with my feelings, my emotions, and my judgment. And I remember I started using real hard. I just ain't pick up no dope. I picked up the casino, and I began to gamble because, after all, I was ashamed to come back around, y'all. It was some serious drama going on then. The drama that started going on during that time was that we was ready to rob some people when we got broke. And I'm talking about now somebody with double digits. What I realized also is that I ain't the only one that runs to Dover, Delaware. What I realized also, there's many of us that's running to the lottery window and putting our money up on the counter and gambling. So once again, I'm not unique. Now, mind you, I ended up in my process of losing everything that I did not value. Everything was lost because I chose to start using. Let me make it real clear. I didn't use any drugs because I still have 21 years clean. I lost it all, but I gained so much. Here we go. I had to move to Baltimore to live with my sponsor for about 6 months to get myself together because my last days at that time was in the basement of my husband's, my first husband's a home, his mother's apartment. I moved into a shooting gallery at 13 years clean. I came home one day from a training, a very, very spiritually uplifting training, and I walked back into the shooting gallery at 13 years clean. Blood was all over the place. It smelled just like a shooting gallery. I knew I had to run. And I called my sponsor, thank God for sponsorship, and I told her I just can't deal with this no more. And she told me to come back to Baltimore. And I went back to Baltimore and I got my life together. I began to acquire some things from other people's garbage. I was working two jobs making buku money. But the blessings came in the midst of all that drama. Living with my sponsor at that time, she and I used to shop from the dumpster. I just love my story. I just love my story. Because losing some stuff to gain some stuff, to understand to gain it this time is to recognize that these are God's gifts. This was other people's garbage. This was other people's garbage that was being thrown in trash dumpsters that became truly a treasure for me. It really did. These were some college students that began to throw their mattresses out the door by the dumpster. These were these rich white college students that was throwing their furniture by the dumpster. There was no shame in our game. We got our cars and we loaded up. And when you walked in my little one-bedroom apartment, you felt the presence of God. Yeah, you felt the presence of peace, because all of that old stuff had been removed. And I began to treasure what God had blessed me with. And I still hold fast to that today. When they gave me the topic of letting go of drugs and replacing it with drama, it just affected my ego. It's like, how dare them give me a topic like that? Not where I'm at. Drama? Ain't no drama going on. What drama? I done calmed down a little bit. Ain't no whole lot of drama going on. But it gave me an opportunity to do some reflection. By way of some other experiences with time. But what I talk about in the foundation was very solid. I had an opportunity to walk the beach today. I refused to allow that topic to get up here. I knew the topic has to go here, and that's in the spirit. I knew I had to get out of the way. So when people was calling me all during the week, asking me how was I, I'm just fine. And I ain't talking about fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and egotistical. I'm just fine. How I'm so fine is that I'm just trusting God in the process. And in trusting God in the process of my sharing, be mindful and aware that when God leaves you and you step in, you better sit down. Because it ain't about impressing you. It's really about sharing my experience, my strength, and my hope. And so what I did when the flesh and the humanness began to take over this morning, I began to walk the beach. And I began to reflect on some of God's gift. And water is my thing. If I can get around a body of water, you know, water is cleansing, whether you're drinking it or whether you're sitting in it or whether you're just absorbing the freshness of it. And so I began to cleanse by walking the ocean, by walking the beach. And I began to see how smooth when the tides was coming in, how smooth the foundation became. Then I began to see the foundation of the sand with little holes in it. Then I began to reflect. Then when I came off the water, I went back to the room with my second husband. Just number two. It ain't no threes and fours. Just number two. And he began to tell me, he said, you know, I know what you can talk about. You can talk about the drama of your health issues. And I said to myself, ain't nobody asked you to help me with no topic. Who you been talking to that you need to come in and tell me? So I started to act out a little bit, you know. Then I said, well, thank you. That's some big girl stuff. Well, thank you. I said, where you get it from? He said, you know, look like you're seeking instant gratification for this health issues. Well, I've been faced with some health challenges. Right now, as I speak, I really can't see you too clear. I contracted this health problem that started out like pink eye, and it continued on to what they call uveitis. And it had gotten to a point that my eyes became very blurred. It started becoming a little bit scary, but faith kicked in and said it's just one eye, so if you lose one, you still got the other. And then reality set in and said, but you know what, from where you've come from, and the decisions and some choices that you have made in life, anything could go on. Yeah. So I had to go back and I had to look at some of the choices and the decisions that I had made in this past life. And I had got to a point when I was putting drops in my eye and kept going back and forth, and they said it wasn't clearing up. Then they started taking all these kind of tests, HIV tests, STD tests. And so then I wanted to look outside of me and say, now let me get something. Let me have something and see what happened. Let me have something and just see what happened. Let them people tell me I got something and see what's going to happen. I even said that to my husband. Let them people tell me I got something and see what's going to happen. But I had to get honest with myself. I had to go way back and do some examination. And I believe the greatest thing that the recovery has given me is to thine own self be true. Well, I had to go back and look at some old behaviors to realize is that whatever you're given, you gave it to yourself. You're responsible for your life, nobody else. Well, when all the tests came back, they were negative. Oh, that was a hallelujah moment at that time. Then the doctor wanted to stick a needle in my eye. I told him, I don't give a shit if you got to stick it in my ass. Come on with it. Because after these results, being all negative, I really don't care where you got to stick the needle. So I sat there very courageous, very faith-filled, that I could get better. And so this doctor stuck the needle in my eye. And I just sat there, just saying, thank you, God. And then my eye began to clear up. Then I go into surgery, and I place on medications. And yeah, for the first part, yeah, I'm dependent on medication. You damn right, because I'm in pain. But I was making other people aware that I'm on medications. And so I remember this person saying to me this morning that I'm seeking instant gratification. No, I mean, I'm seeking gratification. I don't like pain. And so that's why I walked the earth. Now I walked the sand. And when I walked that sand, there was some holes in it. That was a reflection of Kern. Your foundation could be weakening with those holes in the sand. That's what I got in touch with. And what that gave me was is that you just got to be real. You just got to rebuild and keep building on that foundation. I've gone through many, many storms in this program, and I thank God for every last one of them. I thank God for the losses in order to gain. I thank God for the home that I have today that I cherish because it's a gift from God. It may appear to have come from man, but it didn't. It came from God. And every day that I wake up, I just thank my God for the blessings and the gifts of being in a home, because not too long ago, I was homeless. And so today, I've been blessed with a gift from God, and I choose to use it that way, as a gift. As a gift. And when I open my doors up, I open it up to my home. And when that home starts becoming a little too cold, because there are some issues going on in the home. Some issues that go on in the home. That's some internal drama shit that goes on. It does. It does. That's some internal drama that goes on the inside. And so then you start battling against flesh and spirit. Getting out the way, Kern. Letting God do what he got to do. Because after all, he's brought you through so much that you got to remember that he can do it. I can say this and shut up. This is something I live by, and I try to hold it every day of my life. When I feel like I'm going through a struggle, what I tell myself is that the rewards is in the struggle of the journey, not in the destination. It's not about where I'm ending up at. It's how I come through it. It's how I get through it makes all the difference in the world. It ain't nothing that I don't need to share that I can't share, not cause anonymous. I say again, and I'll sit down, let not my living be in vain, that everything that I go through is not just for me. It's to help somebody else. And that's why I chose to stand here today, trusting in God and believing in the topic of replacing drugs with drama. Thank you.
All right, our next speaker is Charles C. from D.C.
Hi, family. My name is Charles. I'm a great recovering addict. You know, they call me Charles C.C. from D.C. I want the record to reflect that I am a materialistic person. You know, but I want the whole package. I want the materialistic and the spiritual. And this is what's happening with my life. First I need to say that I thank a person in this room that my problem was I thought that it wasn't drugs, it was I just kept going to jail. And when I got out for the last time, having been back 23 years since being in here, a person in these rooms brought me to these rooms and dropped me off. What the? Now, we done hustled out in the street, did everything, used drugs, everything together. And she said, you need to get you a winning wear and a flash pass. I'm a Cadillac driver, I'm a flash pass. And find you some meetings. Now, I don't know don't know nothing about recovery, except for when they brought it down in Lawton. And the only thing was about there is that I was breaking into monotony, you know, to go to a meeting. My first crazy experience of recovery was they brought a meeting down in Lawton. And they said, and I raised my hand and they looked over me and I got mad and and they finally called me and I said, like, hey, I'm a man, profound shit. I'm a man who wants to own some bricks. I say, so coming out and getting posseing up with recovery and ain't gonna get a good job. How is that going to work? Because, see, I sold drugs and all this stuff. So the person that was chairing the meeting, he said, like, how long you been coming to jail? I said, oh, about 21 years. He said, well, like, you seem like you own some bricks already. Good God Almighty, that was like a boulder hit me. You know, something woke up, a rule of awakening unbeknown to me, you know. So when I got out here and the person took me to a meeting and dropped me off, I said, oh, I'll fix her. It was two of them. I'll fix them, you know. So I got the winning wear, and I just want to thank her for allowing me to find recovery amongst you all by myself. Because this is a self program. And even though it's a we program, but first you got to identify self in. And I wouldn't have, you know. So as I go to meetings, I'm going in spite. To spite her, I'll show you a damn thing. You know, I don't need you. Now, I knew nothing about powerlessness. You know, I always thought that, like, hey, my only problem was going to jail, not using drugs. So I didn't know nothing about powerlessness. I knew about a God of my understanding, because my grandmother raised 10 of us, and she, for 60 years, was taking us to church day in, day out, and all that kind of stuff. So I knew about a God of my understanding, but I never knew that I didn't really accept him in, except for, God, let this be some good dope. Let me get a good hit where it don't clog up, you know, or whatever I was using. Let it be good. Let me get a good hustle in the day or whatever. I didn't know him on the spiritual part for like I know him today. Now, the other part that took place in my life is they told me to get in a transition house. Now, most of my life been on the inside. And when I went in I said, well, what's a transition house? And the brother told me that It's a house where men at, but you're safe because you're around recovering people. Men, safe, around recovering people. Just got out of Lawton. Men, not safe. Not around recovering people. I say, it's not unisex? They said, no. I said, well, I don't want it. So it took me a minute, and then I said, well, I better take this if I'm going to try to hold on to something. Now, when I got in there, they told me how much the rent was and what was the stipulations and all that. But my first check, in God we trust, I trusted that God understood, if they didn't understand, that I was supposed to get a pair of crocodile shoes. I love reptiles. So I took my check and went out and bought a pair of crocodile boots. And I'll get with the rent if they just hold on. Don't press me. So when the meeting came and they said, like, well, how come you don't have your rent? You're working. And I thank a brother that's in here today. I think he was one of the ones who said, get rid of him. He came in here humble, but look at him now. And I thank him. Because they said, like, when I told them I bought a pair of boots and I'll straighten up the rent later on, they began to tell me, like, no, that's not how it goes. You got to pay your rent. If you have some money left over, you buy the boots. They said, you still got the receipt? I didn't know where they was going. I said, yes. They said, well, you need to take the boots back. Take the boots back. What kind of shit is that? You know, what kind of fellowship? I'm trying to figure out what I done got myself into. You know? So I took the boots back. And I paid my rent. And all that moaning and stuff that I did, I stayed in that Oxford house for 3.5 years in building a foundation. You know, unbeknown to me. Now, still, I like to say this here, that believing is the epitome of my life. If I believe that I can achieve, then I can achieve through God. See, I have to connect both of them. If I believe that I can't achieve, then I won't achieve. And I'll be stagnated, complaining, you know, or hating. Oh, look at her, or look at him. They got a house, so what? They think they all that now. You know, not knowing that I could get one too. I didn't like school. I went back and got my master's. I didn't like school, like nothing about school, but I went back and got certified, level 1, level 2, certified addiction counselor, you know? So that helped me a great deal. But what still was the problem was connecting my will with God's will. Now, from 2 to 4, you're working on self. I mean, from 2 to 9 steps, you're working on self. You're learning a whole lot about self. 4th step, I brought out how dishonest I was, you know, how conceited, well, not conceited, self-centered, you know. Brought out a whole lot of stuff. Worked on a whole lot of stuff. Now, when I got to the 10th step, by this time I got about 10, 11, 12 years, and I thought that I was well. And I thought that this was the time for me to start easy selling, you know? But now what happened is this guy crossed the street from where I live at. There was a parking, a house that had a driveway. Now the lady gave me permission to park my car that had dead tags on it in the yard. She didn't give him permission. So When I moved out one day, he rolled in real fast. So I say, my brother, look, humble. Learn this from y'all, my brother. Lawton don't teach you this. You know, I say, you in my spot, man. He gave me the hand. What kind of shit is it? It was Lawton at the hand. You know, I say, well, man, he say, so he gave me a flim-flam. He say, like, look, I'm doing some work for the lady, the owner, and she told me to park here. Well, I can't do nothing about that. That makes sense. I said, but I'm going to ask her. Now, I talked it over with y'all. Y'all told me leave it alone. It's not my spot, no way. But something inside of me, they say, nah, he violating. Something ain't right about this picture. And when I asked the lady, she said, I told you was the only one who, that's all I need to hear. I couldn't wait to see the guy. 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm coming from a club, you know, but it was, the drilling was already there. I just waiting to see him. He over there with his hood up. I couldn't even park the car. I parked the car slanted in the street. Jumped out, ran over there. I said, look, I told you that I was going to ask the lady, and she said that you wasn't supposed to be in there, and you're going to have to get this shit out of here. He looked at me like, and I hit him. And he fell. And he hit his head on a brick. And I thought I had killed him. Now God coming in. Now God coming into play. I commenced to pray, the serenity prayer. You know, see, I said, Lord, please, you know, don't let this man be dead. For I knew not what I did. If you just help me this time, I'm going to learn this recovery shit. I swear to you. The guy got up eventually. And I thought he wanted to just square off. I got in my stance, and he walked past me and went and got the police. In Washington, D.C., you don't go get the police. You straighten your own stuff. And I got about 10 or 15 years working steps, got sponsored, everything. Got a grand sponsor, everything. But having made the connect with God's will and my will. You know, so at that point, the police locked my ass up the next day. I said, well, he hit me first. You know, I ain't know I was a liar like that. But I do remember when I was small and with my brothers and sisters, when I told the truth, I got a whooping. And when I lied, I got away. He hit me first. The police said, well, did you press charges? I said, no. They said, well, you got to go to jail. Because he pressed charges. Okay, that was an experience. A rule of awakening. Say, Lord, I'm in jail. I'm in a fetus position. Humble. Lord, please, if you just let me go, I'm tired of doing time, I'll get this thing. Please, God. You know, I'm usually in jail, starting fires, throwing stuff out the cells, creating a lot of chaos. This time I got some recovery underneath me, and I see that I don't want to be in here. I'm scared. It's not for me. I need recovery. You know, so I got out. Now, I love material things. Okay, my mortgage went up. I thought I could handle it. But I want to handle my mortgage going up, and I want to buy mints, reptiles, diamonds. You know, I want to keep buying that shit, but I want to handle this too. So I commenced to pray. You know, I said, God, well, you know my situation. And you know me better than I know myself. And you know I'm going to mismanage some stuff. And I need you, if I don't need you no more in life, I need you to help keep me on a direct plane to paying my mortgage. Since it's done went up and the utility bills done went up as well. Well, I thought that God had that. Because I did pray. I did. I ain't lying. I prayed. But I forgot that you got to put some work with this. So I commenced buying furs, pretty cars, and reptiles, and all that stuff. And mortgage continued to go further and further in the rear. And then here recently, God damn it, he sent me a certified letter. Say that your house is in foreclosure, and come April the 21st, what's today's day? We're going to be auctioning your goddamn house. What? Now, mind you, something told me to not spend all the money. So I saved $7,000. I said, well, I got $7,000 in my most humblingest voice. They say, no, you need to bring $10,000 because you need to pay now your late fee, I mean your late mortgage, the late fees, and the attorney fees. I said, God damn. I got to bring $10,000. So I went out, I figured, let me say this here. If you all are in recovery, I heard Kern say, hey, there's a fellowship and there's recovery. If you're in recovery and you don't have 1 to 3 people in your life that you can call on in a bad situation, financially, mentally, you could talk it over, whatever. If you don't have 1 to 3, you need to take a look at yourself in the mirror. Something is going on with you because it all starts and ends with you. So they say $10,000. I said, where in the hell am I going to get $3,000 from? My job ain't paying like that. You know? And I went out there and I put the word out. Man, loan me this. I'll give it back. And $4,000 came up. I sent them $10,464.44. 2 hours later, they say, Mr. Caldwell, the money that you done sent us is not enough. Wait a minute now. Come on. You all told me $10,000. I sent you $10,464.44. What do you mean? What's happening? They say, no, you need to put attach April. It wasn't even April. It was March. Well, it was the 31st of March when they got the money. I thought you had to wait till April before you could send me April's mortgage, you know? And they said, no, it's now it's $14,000. I done went and got $4,000. Ain't got that many. We're in a session. Folks, it's tight. You know, I don't go to no hustlers no more, you know, and ask for no money. This is people who work in giving this money up. So I commenced to praying. See, I do know when to pray. Sometimes. And I commenced to praying hard. And God revealed a loan modification. And I played, somebody told me to go into, what's that? Come on now, some of y'all know that. I know I ain't the only one who's going, been in foreclosure or going in foreclosure. Bankruptcy. There you go, bankruptcy. That's bankruptcy. I don't want to lose the house. Say, shit, I'm fighting. I got gloves on and everything. I'm fighting for the house. I ain't trying to lose it. They said, no, you won't lose it. I said, oh, I don't want to have no bad credit like that either. You know? So I got the loan modification and the foreclosure has been held up. God's still working when I wasn't, you know. So now I got my eye on the sparrow now. Now I'm saving every dollar. I'm doing what you all tell me to do now, you know. Because, like, if the foreclosure doesn't work, you know, and when we go to court, I want to be able to say that I got $4,000 or $6,000 or however much, because I don't want to lose my house. We work too hard to get the little bit that we have. I know I do, you know. Now, the other part of my craziness is my job. Got the best job in the world. Work at home. Who don't like that? Wake up out of bed anytime you want to. Clock in from the computer. My director is in Pensacola, Florida. Hope anybody in here that works with me. You know, because everything ain't for everybody. Still holding on to that, even though I heard what Curtis said. I'm still holding. You know, and because there's a lot of perks in there, I do have health issues. Let me bring that up. You know, I'm always trying to justify some shit. Sometimes with my diabetes too, I don't feel good and I don't want to go to work, but I want the 8 hours. I want to get paid for it, but I don't want to go. Y'all don't hear me. I'm going to say that again. I want to get paid for the 8 hours, but I don't want to go to work. You know? And because I have the option not to go, and my boss not saying, like, if she say, Charles, is you at work? I'm a lie. Yeah. Working hard in a month. She asked me, what you doing? What I do is I hire disability people for the VA hospitals in Baltimore, Virginia, and D.C. And so if she was to question me, dishonesty gonna kick in. But she doesn't. I have the best boss and everything. But I'm scared to death. I'm scared that, like, I'm gonna lose this job. Because I am not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And that's going to work. You know, I have a certain place, which is the Soldiers Home in Washington, D.C., for the ones that is in D.C. here, that I definitely go there Monday and Tuesday because they're trying to micromanage me. They're not my boss. I had to get them straight. Now listen to that. I had to get them straight. I had to get the bosses straight. Wait a minute now. My boss is in Pensacola, Florida. Watch out there now. You know, talk to my boss in Pensacola, Florida. We had a big convention and they did. You know? And my boss said, well, what's going on? I said, I don't know. I'm there all the time, boss. She said, well, like, just write up the time that you're there and show up there and write a memo and so they can put it on their walls and you can put it on your door. And I do that now. And I'm there. I show up there Monday and Tuesday. You know, it's really, sometimes, it's not hard. This is a simple program for a complicated individual. And see, I'm a good rationale. I can rationale like, hey, I'm only human. I'm not perfect. I got flaws. I have shortcomings. What do you expect out of me? I'm going to fall sometime, you know? But the thing is, and that's all true, but the thing is, sometimes I like to use it to my advantage, you know? And that's when it's not safe, You know, that's when I really, really get scared, when the pressure, when it get out of control. Because anytime the ego, no, not the ego, the super ego tells you that it's okay to do something wrong, trust me, if you get away with it, what? You're going to do it again. So every time that happens, I realize, in thanking you people, that, man, if I don't make the connect with a God of my understanding and allow that God will to be done, then it's nothing going to be but chaos throughout my life. I'm at a level of my recovery where I want to be saying, easy does it. And for the most part, it is easy does it. For the most part, even though I shared a lot of chaotic stuff, for the most part of my life, and for all of you all that know me in D.C., you see me with smiles. I'm just glad to be here. You know, see, you, when they say, well, like, hey, how you feel, man? I can't even explain how I feel, man. I feel so good that today I don't have to wake up to what I gotta do, where I gotta go, who I gotta rob, who I gotta sell some drugs to, you know, to get me. I'm so glad I don't have to do that today. There was another part that was in me that from my mother had us so dropped us out so fast that in a young age that she didn't really stay there and nurture us. It was my grandmother who did that. So I had abandonment issues that I didn't know until I did that fourth step. So I didn't know I had a problem with women. I thought women wasn't my problem. I ain't a bad looking guy. And, you know, I share my money with you. And none of y'all like that, huh? You know, we do some nice things. But I couldn't hold. The biggest problem with my life was that I could always cop anything. Homes, women. Oh, no, homes, woman. I'm working on something today. You know, a lot of times the temptation is there for women. And I have to resort back to what you all say, you know, that women is out of control. The 10th and 11th step says that it's maintenance time. Y'all don't hear me. I'm going to say it again to you. I'm going to say it a little louder this time. The 10th and 11th step is maintenance time. You can't keep using all these excuses. I can't. You know? Because I do want to reach easy does it. I do want to reach keep it simple. It's some of you all out there that's at that level. Maybe. Yeah, I had to say maybe. Watch out there now. You know? But I know that every time I connect with the God of my understanding, everything goes right. Every time I put some chaotic stuff in thinking that I'm connecting with the God of my understanding, it's not that I don't get to the point. It's just that I become overwhelmed because my stuff is in the way. See, I can't go the easy does it way. But if you go on God's way, it's nothing, and you believe it, and you're doing the necessary footwork through faith that it will materialize or manifest, then you know what? It is easy, does it? But goddamn, that's easy said than done. You know? Folks call me and they say, like, with that foreclosure stuff, they say, how you feeling? Folks who got a good time and working on stuff, they say, how you feeling? I say, man, I'm scared to death. I'm worried up. You know? Man, what you think I should do? They say, easy does it. You ain't been in this situation. You don't understand. They say, well, do you have a... Now, 23 years, and if you ain't got a God, you understand about now. You know, if you ain't got some belief and faith going on now, maybe you're in the wrong program, Charles. You know? Maybe you will do better out there. You know? So, it took me a while. I heard Karen say she walked the sands to get the solitude that you need sometimes. You know? Because it's so much going on in my life that your thoughts is running all over the place. Let me say this here. It's your responsibility. It's my responsibility to check myself. Call halt. Take a look at. Identify some shit. You know? Commence to pray. Talk it over with somebody. That's hard for me. Talk it over with God. That's all right. But talk it over with you all. Everybody's business ain't nobody's business. You know how y'all are. I tell you something, you go and tell somebody else. I tell you, now hold that. You go and tell somebody else and they'll spread it, you know, all over the place. Charles disrespect Carla. Charles disrespect Carla. No, I ain't say that. I said I was mad with Carla. Charles disrespect Carla and get ready to kick her out. What the hell? I ain't say that. Who told you? I want to know, because now the chaos is in me. Now I'm saying, like, I need to straighten that. Wow. You know? But what I realized in my recovery is that, like, hey, things are going to happen. And this is learning how to live life on life terms. But if I don't continue to practice, you know, allowing God to work in my life through whatever is going on in my life, then I can't hang. It ain't gonna work. I'll be just getting year after year of clean, not sober. Today I want to be sober. Along with clean. All I have is today, just for today. The 25 years is beautiful for a newcomer to know that you can get this. I don't care where you've been, what you done did. You know, one day at a time. But the fact is that I don't want to continue in recovery with a lot of chaos going on. Year after year after year after year. So, therefore, I have to go back to step one. I'm powerless. Face up to it and move on throughout the steps. I want to thank you all for being here for me. I'm definitely here for you. Thank you.